Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you are new to the channel, make sure you subscribe and click the notification bell so you never miss another video. Shout out to my channel members and my patrons, and make sure everybody clicks that thumbs up. Now, let's get spooky. Hunting season. The national forest I work at is located in the region that is extremely favorite for deer hunting. Our white-tailed deer population is outrageous compared to other states around us. When I was a kid, I never saw deer around, but nowadays, I usually hit a few of them each year driving down the road. So, when hunting season is in, hunters from all over the country spill into the national forest. Because we only have a handful of law enforcement guys, there isn't enough to maintain the rules of the forest. So, all the trail, rec, and fire guys have to do some overtime and just be seen around the forest in our official forest vehicles. I tend to stick to the rec areas where hunting isn't allowed so that no one is sneaking in and trying to harvest a deer. One day, in a popular rec area, I was driving around to be noticed. No hikers were there that day, shockingly, so I decided to hike a short trail to better ensure things were being as they should be. I parked my truck, put on a crap ton of blaze orange, because some of the out-of-town hunters will shoot anything that moves thinking that it's a deer. Even people are putting on orange vests in their yards because of this. It's crazy. They have shot cows, goats, cats, dogs, you name it. Anyways, back to the story. I started walking down a hiker-only trail that went a ways into the backcountry of this rec area. As I walked down this trail, it felt like I was being watched. It felt like I was being stalked. You know that feeling. The hair raised on the back of my neck, and just a feeling on impending doom overcoming your emotions. This is what it felt like for me. Then, I heard something that made me just about jump out of my skin. Ruffling in the trees right next to me. I stopped and turned, looking at it, backing up. I had nowhere to go, and right before I was about to start running back to where I came from, a deer popped out. It was a buck with a lot of points, but that wasn't the problem. The problem is that it was standing on its two hind legs, holding its two front legs far out as if to say, "Wait a minute, don't go anywhere." Its mouth began to move. And I kid you not, it started talking to me.
"Wait, don't run, it's okay. Don't be afraid, I won't hurt you,"
the dang deer said to me, standing within a few feet facing me. I couldn't speak. I was in shock. I couldn't move. I was terrified, but could do nothing in response by my overwhelming fear of this unknown. Now, people, I don't use drugs or alcohol, and I never have even tried those things. This was as real as reality gets.
"It's okay, buddy. Don't run. I don't want to hurt you," said the deer.
It got closer and closer and finally rested its front legs on my shoulders. It put its face close to mine and continued to speak.
When I was a fawn, I was separated from my mother. I was scared and ran across the road. You were driving and you stopped your truck from hitting me. I've been looking for you ever since. I could tell you how thankful I am. I will always owe you a debt.
Still in shock, all I could muster up was, "Oh, you're welcome." The deer then appeared to smile and then backed away from me. It reached down and put its legs behind a log. First, it picked up an orange vest and somehow threw it over itself because deer don't have any hands. Then, it reached down with both legs and picked up a shotgun before it walked away like a human. It said one last thing.
Be careful. There are a lot of crazy hunters out there that you will shoot by mistake, thinking you're one of the ones that were allowed to harvest.
And then it walked away. I'll be honest, if I had to pee at that very moment, I would have peed all over my leg. I stood there for almost an hour trying to get my bearings back to understand what the hell had just happened. I never saw that particular deer again. I do wonder about it, and if it had a good harvest that year. Quite a few out-of-town hunters went missing and were never found again. Old Forest Roads. Have you ever found an Indian arrowhead? If you have, you're lucky because chances are, the piece of chert fashioned into an arrowhead's point could be over 12,000 years old. Most of those were crafted before European settlers invaded North America and forced the natives from their land. You used to be able to find them a lot in crop fields after they had been plowed, especially with their fields surrounded mountain-like hills. Most of the mounds were used by the natives for various reasons. It is more difficult to find the arrowheads nowadays, because most farmers no longer disc their fields. Advances in farming technology is getting better. But what does this have to do with the topic of the story, Old Forest Roads? I'll explain. If you wander around the forest I work at, you'll find old road-like depressions that stretch throughout many parts of the forest. Those are old forest roads or old wagon roads. Before the forest was a forest, horse-drawn wagons used to use these roads to get around. This was before cars. These wagon roads would trail before there were roads. The trails were found by the European settlers. The trails were made by Native Americans long before anyone visited the continent. A lot of the modern roads were formerly trails made by settlers who made them along old Indian trails. In a particular wilderness area, we have a few of these old forest roads that we've kept. In a particular wilderness area, we have a few of these old forest roads that we've attempted to try to block as much as possible. The road isn't the problem, it's what the roads lead to. It's a wilderness so legally, you could only get to it by horse or foot. Motor vehicles or even bicycles of any kind are prohibited in these wilderness areas. We have done a good job of making the road disappear, but every now and then hikers or horseback riders get off trail, getting lost and finding themselves traveling down this old road. They likely assume it's an old trail that will be rerouted and they will follow it to try to get back to a newer trail. I just hate what happens if they reach the end of it. When the government acquired this particular parcel of land, they had to do it through eminent domain. This means that we forced the owner to sell it to us for what we defined it as a fair price, or we would take it by law. It doesn't sound right, and it probably isn't, but without that power, most of your public land wouldn't exist today. We'd probably be in a lot worse position than we are today for that matter. The previous owner really put up a fight. It was a big enough fight to where the local police had to get involved, and the man was shot in the process. I think that he lived, but he wasn't in good shape after being shot. Obviously, we took the land anyways. Once we took it, we sent surveyors out to mark the boundary of the land and set bearing trees. That's when the road was discovered. Now this particular parcel of land still had forest on it, from virgin growth woods. Most of the land that we took was bare and eroded from failed farming operations, and it took a long time to reforest. Anyways, the Forest Service people at that time, this was in the 1940s, mind you, found this road, followed it to the end, and was amazed by what they had found. For about 4 acres in length and circumference, was a bare mass in the land at the end of the old road. No trees, no grass, just dirt, and it looked like fresh tilled dirt, like you'd find in a freshly tilled garden. The surveyors got to digging around the dirt with their hands, and unearthed massive amounts of arrowheads under just a couple of inches of dirt. I'm talking massive amounts piled on top of one another. It was like a backhoe brought a bucket load of them and just emptied them all out into the ground like a pile of rocks, and then just put some dirt over them. This is how it was across the entire mass of bare land. The thickness of the arrowheads had to be anywhere from 4 to 6 feet deep of them. I've seen it myself in modern times, and it's amazing to say the least. What isn't amazing is the phenomena that occurs if you disturb the land here. The surveyors from the 1940s who originally found the site took handfuls of the artifacts and kept them for themselves, and then told the government about the site. Those surveyors died a few days later. They died of internal bleeding. Autopsy results showed their insides were cut up by rocks inside their stomach. Once the rocks were extracted, it became known for what they were: arrowheads. The arrowheads they took were too big to swallow, and they intact perfectly when extracted from the deceased surveyors. The government sent out archaeologists, a whole team of them, to the site. They dug into the ground and found a mass grave of what they thought to have been natives of the land before settlers arrived. Most of the remains indicated that they had died from gunshot wounds. Guns were introduced here by European settlers, so it's safe to say we probably did the killing. Some of the scientists at the dig site took some artifacts with them. They died a few days later, and you know where they found the artifacts. That's right, inside them. The government in response kept the discovery secret and attempted to plant trees in the bare mass of land to conceal it, meanwhile putting around-the-clock armed guards at the site to keep people away from it. No matter what, nothing will grow. Then finally, they tried something else. Garlic mustard. It's highly invasive and overwhelmingly spreading plant that isn't native at all. Until then, we had no garlic mustard anywhere in the state. They planted it at the site and it worked. It took over and spread like wildfire. For now, it's hidden, but occasionally people wander into it. No one digs in it because they think all the artifacts are in the natural shelters elsewhere, so they dig around those places. Illegally, mind you. But the issue is, after people wander into this area, they often experience hallucinations and night terrors of being hunted by Indian ghosts looking for revenge. Lost Cave. Thinking about my previous story of the mass grave of the natives reminded me of another experience I had about 10 years ago. I had assisted one of our zoologists in a survey of a cave to see how the bats were doing in terms of white nose syndrome. We had previously closed all the caves to help prevent the spread of the syndrome. Bats are so important to our natural resources. People really need to wake up over their importance. But back to the story. Anyways, I did the bat survey with the zoologist. It was the first time I had ever been in a cave, and I got hooked on it. I started volunteering to do every bat survey he did, and because I was a big help, the zoologist gladly accepted it. But eventually, the surveys came to an end because the data and samples needed were gathered, and the cave visits ended. Caving had become somewhat of an addiction for me, so it made me pretty depressed. Now, we cannot just unlock cave closures and go into them anytime we want because we're the feds. There is a chain of command process to get access, and I don't have that access. So, I had to resort to caves of private property, which are everywhere around here. I joined the local Grotto, an organization of amateur cave explorers, and we caved every chance we got. It was so much fun at the time. I remember one cave. We had to army crawl for 2 miles in the water before reaching the void that was the size of a football field. You had to wear wetsuits and bring snorkeling gear in some of those caves. No joke, people. So, I made a lot of caver friends in this process. One in particular. We will call him John. He was probably the guru of the group. He knew every cave in this region, whether it was public land or private property. He knew about caves that the Forest Service didn't even know about. But there was one cave in the remote area the Forest said he knew about but was never able to find. It really bothered him too. So, I decided to make it a mission to find an opening to the cave, explore it a little on my own, and then bring it back to him. I'd be his best friend at that point, I just knew it. So, alone one weekend I had off, which is rare. I got my pack and set off to do a few days overnight hiking in this remote portion of the forest where he thought the cave was at. The first day, I found nothing. I searched all day and into some of the night. The second day, I found nothing still. The third day was my return home trip. I was pretty disappointed, but I was also pretty worn out. I effectively decided to take a more rugged but more shorter route out of the forest. It was an area where known rattlesnake dens were located, so the danger was significantly increased as it was the snake migration season. But I was ready to get out of there and get a good night's rest before I was back to the forest the next day. As I was bushwhacked up and down ridgelines, I saw a particular unique-looking knob of limestone bluff. It earned my interest enough where I went out of my way to go explore it. I climbed up a really steep and dangerous grade to get to the base of the knob, and then started walking around its base at ground level. I saw carvings on it, and I instantly knew it was not modern. They picked into the rock, meaning another sharp rock was used to repeat the strike to the bluff creating the carving. It was Native American, and it was undocumented rock art. The Forest Service didn't know about these carvings, and I just found them. I knew that I was going to be hailed as a hero to our archaeologists. So, I recorded the coordinates on my GPS. I didn't take any photos because I didn't have my camera. I had a flip phone back then, and its camera was not very good. I figured I'd bring a team back and we'll get the photos then. That never happened, though. After recording the location of the carvings, I continued the hike around the bluff. A few dozen feet later, the air suddenly got cooler. I felt a breeze. I felt it beneath me. I looked down at a pile of rocks and I could feel air coming through the rocks and hitting my face. That meant that there was a void under these rocks. A cave! Carefully, I started moving the rocks from the pile. I didn't want to cause a cave-in or disturb a potential den of timbering rattlesnakes. I was pretty far from help and had no phone signal at all. Once I got enough rocks cleared, I could see that it was a cave opening and about big enough for me to squeeze into. I thought to myself, I actually found the cave that John was looking for. He was going to be so happy, and of course, I had to explore it myself first, right? So, I squeezed myself into the cave and had about a 4-foot drop to the floor. I dropped to the floor and shined my light around. I remember screaming and then stopped myself, pissed off at myself for screaming to begin with. There, my light was fixed on an open wooden box with a very old, very delicate-looking adult skeleton, skull and all. Chunks of chert, arrowheads, and some sort of leather-like skin sheets resting into the box with the deceased. It was old. Late woodland period old. Maybe even older. Carvings were all over the walls of the cave. The void was about 12 feet in height and about a 30-foot circumference. Almost square-shaped, in fact. As I remember, it was like it was a perfectly square-shaped room, like it was made that way. Strange. Anyways, there was another hole, a tunnel attached to a room. I took it, and I wanted to explore a little more. I mean, I found ancient history, and I had to make sure I seen as much of it as I could. The hallway went on forever, and it wasn't very tall or wide. I had to duck and squeeze through it. I had to stop several minutes and rest. I kept pushing on. I bet I went on for about a quarter mile before my light quit working. I stopped to smack it a few times to get it going. It went on really quickly, and then it turned back off. But enough for me to see movement ahead of me further down the tunnel. Maybe 10 or 15 feet from me. I froze in place. Who else or what else could be down here with me? I partially snapped out of it and started trying to work the light again. I couldn't get the dang thing to turn back on after a few moments of trying. I heard movement down the tunnel. I froze and looked, trying to get my eyes adjusted enough to the dark to see something. Anything. I saw nothing. Just darkness. Have you ever been in a cave in the dark? It is the darkest you will ever experience. There is no source of light at all. I could smell something foul, like a dead animal scent where a live animal rolled in it. And when I thought it couldn't get any worse, it got worse. I heard movement. I smelled something dead. And just to aid mystery to mystery, I heard a deep raspy growl towards the direction of the movement. I panicked to say the least. I screamed and chucked the flashlight towards the sound. I could hear it hit whatever I heard, and then that growl went from a deep to high-pitched and almost like a screech sound. I quickly tried to turn around to get back through the tunnel as fast as I could. I forgot, however, the tunnel was tight, and as a result, I got myself stuck trying to turn around. I tugged and tugged and screamed, hoping for a miracle. Then I stopped. I stopped because I didn't hear anything else. I couldn't see anything at all. I just listened. And then something laid on my shoulder and gently rubbed down my arm. I screamed again with all my might. I broke loose from being stuck and started working my way back towards the tunnel as quickly as I could. It felt like miles, but it also felt like someone or something was on my back getting ready to pounce at any moment. I finally reached the room, and the time of day had changed enough to where the light was shining on the skeletal remains in the box. But the skeleton was no longer in the box. It was out of the box on the ground, broken into many pieces with the mouth open as wide as if it could almost be screaming. I remember letting out another scream, jumping in front of the mouth of the cave to squeeze back through the outside again. I got out and instantly started throwing rocks, limbs, everything I could grab to close off the hole. It didn't take long, and when it was covered, I fell backwards with my back hitting a tree. I was breathing rapidly and having a mild panic attack. I got myself to calm down and realized I was safe. Nothing followed me out, and there weren't any noises. I got up and ran away from that area and back to my truck. I deleted the coordinates from my GPS unit, and never told a soul about the place until now. I never visited there again. I think that's good enough for now. That last story really had me reliving that nightmare and shaken up from such a weird event as it was. I need a little while to calm down, but never fear. I'll post some more of my events in a few days. People, do me a favor. Stay on designated trails. Once you get off the trail, you enable so many twists of fate to happen, and some of them are not in your favor. Trust me.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.